Welcome to the Emerging Enterprise Show. This is Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well. I thoroughly enjoyed lunch. I love going. We call it Mama's, but nobody's going to find it if we just tell our listeners that it's Mama's Italian.
It's the Buckhead Italian Market.
I absolutely love that place. Sausage lasagna today, and I really feel like a nap, but I'm excited about today's show, so I won't sleep for another hour.
That's right. This is our show that we're spotlighting some of the people that are emerging, not just startups, at all levels, at the beginning of their journey, and growing into the future big business.
That's right, the up-and-comers, and it's really our secret weapon for going after our own funding.
So that's it.
Supposed to tell everybody?
We're trying to do a little personal consulting, or get personal consulting from our guests.
Right, but all this came about because we started hanging out with the Sanjays of the world, with Startup Riot, and the Michael Blakes of the world with Startup Lounge, and then we've got a partnership with Venture Atlanta. That's going to be a fun thing coming up in October, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's
just
the next big trade show that we'll be working is the Venture Atlanta, 17th and 18th of October?
Right. We're going to be there doing
we'll be doing what we do.
That's
lots of interviews.
So this is going to be a great show. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to hear from CEO and founder of Next Input, Don Metzger. But first up on Emerging Enterprise this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from an outfit called Uber, Mr. Keith Radford. Welcome to the program, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, we are glad to have you, man. Now, we've actually met before.
Oh, yeah. We met about 2 months ago, right before we launched.
Yeah. So I bet you a lot's happened since then. Get us caught
up,
man.
A little bit. So I'm not sure how much everyone knows about Uber, but we're a San Francisco-based technology company that actually... it's a mobile application that lets you order town car service, SUV service, on demand, and the click of a button. So essentially set up your application, your credit card's on file so you don't need cash, press a button, 10 minutes later, town car SUV arrives to pick you up. The cool thing about it is you get a picture of your driver, you actually see the vehicle that they're driving, which is great. You see the estimated time of arrival, and you'll also get a picture of them on the map so you know exactly where they are, when they're going to be there. You don't need cash because your card is charged at the end of the trip, and get a receipt in case you need to expense it. Great for business people, great for daily travel, especially.
Is
for
that
the
how you got here?
I actually drove myself.
So if
I was actually running late, so I had.
So if I had the service, I could call it, and then you'd take me to where I want to go.
I wouldn't do it. So we actually the cool thing, the way it works is we work with existing town car service companies. So. Uh-huh. We actually don't own a single vehicle,
really?
which is great. So we actually work with licensed limo companies, licensed chauffeurs in all the cities. So you never have to worry about getting some random driver. I'm not going to drive you, which is probably the best.
So they're glad to have the business, right? Because this is filling a business that they wouldn't have got from me anyway, because I'm not working with them on a regular basis.
Exactly. So if you kind of think about it, if you're renting a limousine, they take you, drop you off at the airport, and they have 8 hours of downtime. So essentially the way it works is, all the drivers that we work with, we actually provide them with an iPhone with a special application for them to use. And so once they use it, once they use their, done with their regular business, they log on to Uber and actually can pick up clients. So it's great for them because we fill their entire downtime. And it's great for us because clients can, easily get around Atlanta, which is a nightmare with traffic.
Yeah, so. A lot of driving here, so you must like that.
Yeah, I'm originally from Atlanta, so I kind of knew the pain points of the city. Yeah.
So it's the real thing now, but you've probably been telling this story and trying to paint the picture for some time now. Is it getting easier now that you can actually point to stuff?
It's a little bit easier. I think when I first met you, we didn't have a single car in the road. We didn't have, within 2 months, we've grown the fleet. We've officially launched. We've been launched officially for one month. And so what we do in every city is kind of cool. We always try to get a rider zero that's either affiliated with that city or has some type of tie to it. So for Atlanta, Jermaine Dupree was actually our first rider in the city.
So that's a good one.
We try to get a
he's
been great for us, kind of getting us into the music scene, and we're trying to do a lot of stuff with film, music.
Right. They use a lot of limos, so that's
he's
good.
An unbelievable amount of limos. He's one of our best clients. So for us that's been great. Atlanta was the 14th market for Uber. So
That's great.
We just launched Dallas and in Denver shortly after. So, Yeah, it's a fast-growing company.
How did you get hooked up with them?
I kind of got lucky, actually.
His car broke down.
Literally, my car broke down. I requested it. So actually, no, it's funny enough. I actually was in business school last year. So, you know, I was looking to move into technology and, you know, kind of stumbled upon Uber, if you will. They had just launched in Chicago and met the CEO in New York and kind of started a dialogue and kind of just saw where the company was going. You know, they just raised a huge round of funding. So as an MBA student, knowing you have to pay back loans, you want to make sure you're in a company that's going to allow you to do that.
At least for a few years, right?
Exactly.
Now, were you in on any of that as far as the getting the funding, or have you picked up some lessons around getting funding and making sure that you manage that money properly?
Yeah, so I actually wasn't, you know, but I've been fortunate to kind of see a number of the startups that launched around the same time as Uber. And you kind of, you know, I think one of the interesting things is you want a product that people know will work and believe in. So it's not, you know, kind of a gimmick. It's something that, you know, has utility. And so I think that's one of the great things about Uber is that, you know, people saw it and it's like, wow, it's one of those products where you think, why didn't I come up with this before? You know, it's simple, but, you know, if you look at kind of the engineering behind it, it's super complicated. So it's one of those things where it's simple, you know, on the surface. And then when I see what the engineers do, it's like, there's no way that I can pull that off.
So now it's based in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, based in San Francisco, but now 16 markets total. So, you know.
So they put like a Keith in different markets?
There's a Keith in every market. So actually, when I started with the company in January, my job was to launch new markets. So literally come in to a blank slate and set up an entire operations from getting cars to clients to launch dinners to partnerships. So, you know, I launched Los Angeles for the company as well as Philadelphia. And then Atlanta now. So now running Atlanta for the company, which is great.
So what have you learned from Los Angeles to Atlanta? What are some do's and don'ts?
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, there's a lot of similarities between Los Angeles and Atlanta.
Right, they're all driving cities. They're not really walking cities.
Yeah, and so I think for us the biggest challenge is to change consumer behavior. So, you know, we went to Los Angeles, like there's no way this city is going to work. You know, people want to drive everywhere. Traffic is terrible. It turns out everyone hates to drive. valet parking is
right,
a nightmare.
Parking
is a nightmare.
Yeah, right.
And so you come in with this alternative for people that didn't know it was an option. And all of a sudden, they're taking Uber cars to meetings, you know, and it kind of changes the entire consumption and transportation of that city. And so I think Atlanta has a lot of similarities in that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you two things that I find very attractive, and we're no stranger to limo service at my house. My wife is a traveling consultant,
okay,
and so we have limo service almost every week, coming to our house, taking us to the airport. But one thing I really like about this idea, the way you're describing it, is she's not fumbling around for her credit card and trying to, you know, get the receipt, and it's all handled. And I love this aspect of a picture of the driver, because it's not going to be the same guy, but
exactly,
you got that picture, you know that you have that. But I also like the flexibility. So we decided we'd take Marta down to the ball game. But now, you know, the kid's whining and tired. And then, you know, 10, 15 minutes, I can use this system and bada boom, bada bing, I got a driver.
And you get a real-time update. So, you know, we've been doing a lot of cool music events. You know, we did Music Midtown. We work with the Counterpoint Music Festival. We're doing a couple of things coming up over the next couple of weeks, which, you know, from a logistics standpoint, Uber just makes sense to, you know, people can go out, not worry about how many cocktails they're having, and just enjoy their evening. I think, and they change, you know, the pattern of how they go out changes.
Now, how is the pricing? Am I getting a better price through Uber, or am I getting a better price directly through the limo company?
Yep. So basically the way it works, when we price a city, you know, we always price relative to a taxi. So, you know, most people's perception of transportation in a city is they know how much a taxi costs.
Right. Sure.
Most people aren't taking limos around.
Oh, yeah. My God. I know why it went off so well in San Francisco. Plus, they're forever getting it.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. So basically, if you go to San Francisco, people only use Uber. Like, you know, it's kind of replaced what a taxi was before. So for most cities, I would say we're about anywhere from 40% to 80%, twice what a taxi is, but much cheaper than the town car if you rent it on a normal basis. But it's the exact same town car, but you're not having to rent it for a 2-hour minimum or anything like that. So, you know, you're getting better pricing, but you're also getting the convenience that you don't have.
Like, how much would it be? I know you probably don't know the exact amount, but we were downtown today, and downtown has its problems because you got to park, and it could be $10 to park.
Yep.
I mean, just for parking. So if I was downtown, if I was going to drive from Sandy Springs to downtown, how much would that be?
Yeah, so basically the pricing breaks down. It's a part based on the speed you're traveling, so part distance and part time. So you know the average fare in Atlanta is roughly $30 all in. So everything includes tax and tip. You don't have to even think about it. So you know about how many miles to downtown? It's probably like 10 miles.
10 miles.
Yeah,
11.
So probably like a $35-something trip.
So for $35, bucks, I can be downtown and dropped off right at the door, not have to worry about parking, not have to worry about, you know, walking in the rain if
exactly.
It's raining or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, your driver will get out, open the door for you.
And no headaches. You're not fumbling for the credit card. You're right. Not signing the receipt. You're not trying to figure out the tip. Should I tip them in cash and all that jazz? And then, like in our situation, what about like when we do an international series? Like we had the Dutch guy come in.
Right.
And he flew in, had the guy here in town. And they had stuff going on downtown. We could have very easily, cost affordable, we could have said, hey, don't worry about it. We'll have a car pick you up at 200 Peachtree and run you out. And that would have been well worth the money to us.
And the great thing is you can actually order a car. That's one of the things that people get
clever about.
We
can order
about.
In the middle of the show and they'll be here when we need them. Right?
Exactly. We could also order two people.
I like it.
So you know, a lot of people start doing this for like dates. They'll actually order a car to someone because you can actually place the marker where you want the car to pick up.
Kevin, get me a car right now.
Yeah. Just get out of here immediately.
I want to go to the Windrush subdivision.
Yeah, and that's the great thing. Cool, so, right? I mean, the cool thing is we're incorporating our engineers are all in San Francisco, but they're all adding new products. You know, we do a lot of, we actually did the Democratic National Convention and the RNC.
Oh, wow.
As like the official transportation provider for those events.
And,
so,
and money spins from both sides of the aisle. You don't,
yeah,
you're
yeah,
not, you're
yeah,
not
we don't discriminate. Yeah, yeah.
It's nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan.
Right.
And so, we try to do cool things. My biggest thing is to make sure that we integrate into the city so that we're not seen as like the West Coast tech company that comes here, but we want to be seen as part of Atlanta rather than kind of an outside tech company.
So now what's your sweet spot? Is it entertainment companies right now and events like that?
Yeah, so we're trying, that's when Rachel came on board, that's kind of her focus. She's always she knows the tech world, and our job is to kind of try a bunch of different events in the beginning, kind of see what works, and then
because each market's different. Working in Chicago may not be working in Philadelphia. It may not be working here.
Exactly. So, New York has a lot of focus on the tech, but they also have fashion. They also have the banking industry. They have consulting.
Right.
So, I think Atlanta for us will be huge entertainment. I think it's what, number two or three now for the film industry. Music is obviously huge here. All the consulting firms. So, yeah, I think it's...
What about, like, law firms and...
Law firms.
The
people that can expense stuff for us are great. Right. Because, they get a receipt and then
Kevin,
I have to think about
ears.
It. Just as an example.
So now you're here. It's been a couple months now. You're getting the lay of the land.
Yep.
You're getting traction in some areas. What are your biggest needs right now?
Yeah, I think, Atlanta, I think, one of the things is really getting kind of that daytime usage. So we're trying to get people to move away from thinking about, hey, this is, a great thing to use for the weekends or when I'm going for like a nice event, but rather kind of supplementing driving to work or driving to business meetings and making that a part of daily use. I think for us, that's where we want to get to next. So trying to pull in, big companies to make that a part of their daily business. Because, you have execs running all over the city.
So you're targeting companies of a certain size? Is that what you're thinking?
I wouldn't say... We definitely want to go after the big guys. So,
So IBM, like you ought to
be... Yeah,
Poker,
IBM
driveway.
Is listening right now. Yeah, that'd be great to have that.
Every Monday you should be in my driveway.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We would love to get IBM.
But, okay, walk us through that. So what's your path right now to get an IBM or get Delta or UPS is down the street or Newell Rubbermaid's next door.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even have a conversation with them to even consider it? Is that someone in their transportation department? Is it someone in their C-suite, the admins? Do you have to be buddies with every administrative assistant? Like, what's your strategy?
Yeah, I think a lot of times the strategy, you kind of want to get to the person who may not be the the top person, but the person who will influence whoever needs to make the decision. So what I've seen a lot of times, it is the executive assistant who will convince their boss that, hey, if you're going to this meeting or you're going to the airport and you need to get there as quickly as possible, this is the most convenient way. And I think ideally we'd like it to kind of funnel down to, I think for consulting firms, for example, makes sense when they have an entire new analyst class or associate class come in. You can give them perks for new people who are coming to the city. Because the great thing about Uber is you can use us in any city. So if you have the app, you can go to New York, open up the app, and request the cars.
Oh, the same app works everywhere, because Accenture, all the big ones, IBM, like he's talking about, they will have classes of all these kids coming out of school.
Exactly.
And they're dipping them in the dye.
Yep.
And they're cutting, if they all got the Uber app, and you could cut them a heck of a deal up front.
Just I would to, love
so
to
So you
do
wouldn't
that.
Have to eat too much up front. Yeah. I mean, even if you didn't make money on that first round of trips, now you got this whole...
We got the exposure.
Right. You get the exposure. You have that whole... And once... Yours is probably a lot like a... Like the radio business, I bet it's a very experiential. It's a what do you call a puppy dog sale, right?
And exactly. So for us, you know, we try to think because we actually separate into our existing and new users. So a big part of us in a new city is trying to get the exposure, but really bring in those new clients, but also keep them engaged. So you know, that's why we try to do as many events as possible. We try to touch every, you know, basically Rachel and I's job is just saturate the market. That's how we kind of think about it. So, you know, you want to kind of overwhelm people and then you pull back a bit and start becoming more focused in the events. But right now it's really just making sure everyone.
So you're just trying to get out there and be involved in as many events as possible?
Yep. And so, yeah, and that's what we're looking at right now. And then thinking, okay, and then we assess every time we do an event. It's like, hey, did this work? Did this make sense? And if it didn't, how can we change that?
We have a great event for you.
Oh,
right. I mean, we just had a meeting this morning with the World Trade Center in Atlanta, right? Do you do a lot of international? Because international people travel. They use airplanes.
Would love that. Right.
That'd be a good introduction for you,
All those consulates that come in and hang out
there's
for the
seven,
week.
Did you know there's 70 international consulates in Atlanta?
I did not know that.
Did not know that.
We got to get him hooked up with Lilia in that crowd, right?
I would love to meet every single one of them.
Right? That'd be good for you, right?
Especially because, you know, as we do the international, you know, as I said, if I went to Paris tomorrow, I could open up the app. And
the app even works international.
Yeah. So as long as you switch over, as long as you switch over. And the great thing is you can use any device. So people always say, you know, I have a BlackBerry. How do I use Uber? Yeah. It's BlackBerry, Android, old school, SMS. Yeah.
Wow.
So this international crowd, that's a good crew.
That would be perfect
for him.
Yeah.
Consulates? Anyone? Those guys are always traveling.
Yeah. They're not thinking about what they're spending.
Right. They're not shipping their car over. They're here for a week, right?
Yeah, so we try to make, you know, we try to make it as convenient as possible for kind of people to get around a city that's not easy.
Right. What do you think about the Serenbe trip? Is that too far, you think, for us to get a car? Because we're going to want to drink once we're there.
That's right.
You're going to drive? I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Serenbe?
I have not been to Serenbe.
Serenbe is Atlanta's version of Napa. It's like an hour south of here.
Okay.
And it's very like organic, farmy, just kind of granola bar-y people.
Oh, we'd love to get you guys down there.
And we talk about it.
But they do an event every year in November called Afternoon in the Country.
Okay.
And it's a fancy food event. It's like Taste of Atlanta, except with only the greatest restaurants in town.
Oh, when is this? We'll put this on our calendar.
Put it on your calendar.
It's like November,
it's November
1st week
4th,
of November.
November 4th. And it's a benefit for La Dame d'Escoffier, which is a women's culinary group to get more women chefs. And that's who it benefits. But it's the who's who of Atlanta chefs attend this event.
Tell them about the honey. You got to tell them. Okay.
Well, so you've been to like the Taste of events, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Okay, so now just picture only the best restaurants in town doing that. One of the restaurants was doing ice cream, and they were doing it like honey. It was ice cream with honey on top.
Okay.
But the honey was from like a hive. They had an actual hive that they were just like turned it sideways and pouring the honey onto your ice.
So
it's that kind of an event. And it sells out every year. It sold out every year for like 10, 12 years.
How many people attend?
I don't know how many people attend, but I know that
I wasn't invited last year.
I believe there's over 100 vendors there. So there's
this sounds like our core demo.
Right.
Exactly.
And then we can connect you with the lady that runs that because we're looking at possibly doing a remote at that event as well.
Yeah we might do a remote broadcast down there, but even if we don't, we're going to go down there and we're going to drink,
She'll be down there regardless, yeah.
And we don't want to drive
she
back.
Just does kind of fancy food events. So she does them at the aquarium. She does them all over town.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because we try to, you know, our low-hanging fruit is the tech community. So we always try to do, you know, any startup event. We're doing Venture Atlanta this year.
Oh, great.
Remix South. So we're trying to do all the tech stuff, but we want to spread it.
So is Rachel in charge of all this?
So Rachel and I are working together right now on a lot of things. So apparently October is the month for every single event.
Yeah,
in this city.
Event season begins.
Apparently. which we found out.
We're going to be there at Venture Atlanta. We're going to be doing remote broadcast at Venture Atlanta both days, right?
Both days.
Me and you and Keith.
And the crew.
Yeah, I've become part of the crew.
You
have me on board.
You should come conduct a couple of interviews, right?
Yeah. I'm totally on board to do that.
I mean, it's a long couple of days.
Yeah, well, bring one of your clients in there. We'll interview them.
Well, one of the things we're thinking about doing, because we do the South by South in Austin every year. And so, yeah, exactly. So we do that every year. And so we're trying to get a kind of an interview series going. So interviews in the back of Ubers. I don't know if that's, if you can bring all this stuff in an Uber, but
we'll make it work.
You could do that.
We'll make it work.
Get a Hummer.
Get the whole studio in an Uber.
Well, you can get like the grill of a town car, and that could be the front of the display, right? So that we act like we're sitting in a car doing the interview. Right.
Yeah. And I think one of the cool things you may have seen this in other cities, we actually tried to do different car types. For example, if you go to San Francisco, we're doing a thing called UberX, which is lower price but environmentally friendly cars. So like Priuses will be on the roads, and it's a lower cost option for Uber. Some cities are doing Uber Taxi, which is, New York did Uber Taxi.
What about Uber Rickshaw?
Where you we do the rickshaws for our South By.
Right.
We actually did barbecue on demand, so you could actually order a rickshaw on
with
the
food.
With the barbecue sandwich delivered to you.
That's how they do it.
Yeah, people love food and they love free stuff. So that's
all kinds of cross promotional opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess there's a reason to follow up, maybe with Keith.
Yeah, I think so. Most definitely. We'll definitely reconnect with you. And I want to let's get him connected with Sue Ann and get him connected with Lily. Because these are people you need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to give a shout out to, new riders we loved. We're doing a cool promo for new riders in Atlanta. If you download the app and type in Radio X, we're doing free rides up to $25 starting today at 4 p.m. until Friday at 5.
Sweet.
So I'd love to, in honor of you guys having
Thank
us on
you
the
very
show,
much.
Oh, that's
would
fantastic.
Love to get any new riders who are listening.
You know what that means, Kevin? Drink up tonight.
So drink as much as possible. Taste of Atlanta is coming up this
that's
weekend.
Right.
So, Radio X, type it into promotions. And,
good stuff.
Perfect. We'll do. Okay, so what's the best way for people to reach out, get their hands on this app, and or just learn more about the service?
Yeah, so in order to download the app, for iPhone, Android, if you just go to the App Store, type in Uber. It's the first app that shows up. Download the app, and it said, Radio X. As soon as you download it, type that in. For BlackBerry SMS, you can just go on the website to m.uber.com. And set up your account from there. In order to reach out to the Uber team here, you can just email atlanta@uber.com, and either myself or Rachel will follow up immediately because we are always on our computers. And would love to, any event that you have coming up. Halloween is around the corner, so any cool events, definitely reach out to us. We'd definitely love to get you guys set up. And we're here in Midtown, so we're working out of Strongbox West, so if you want to stop by,
that's a nice co-working space.
So Rick Myers and
shout
Amy
out
Uber.
To them over there.
Yeah,
good for them.
If Rick and Amy are listening right now, so we are local and here for the long haul.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, what a pleasure to have you come in the
thanks
studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll have to have you come back sometime.
We have the rest of the team in here, all three of us.
That would be fun. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us for a little
Absolutely.
Bit? Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to visit our next guest. Next up on Emerging Enterprise, Lee, is CEO and founder of Next Input, Don Metzger. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Don. I'm welcome.
And what kind of limo did you drive in here with today?
It was Marta. Because I didn't know about Uber.
Now you do.
So Next Input, what are you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, we're actually the next generation of touch interfaces. And we were built here from a team that came out of Georgia Tech and the ATDC, located right down in Midtown.
Wow, major kudos for ATDC, huh? They got their fingers in everything.
It becomes the cornerstone, and we like to be part of the technology and teams that are developing at the university level, and our technology really focuses on that next generation of touch interfaces, the mobile and tablet devices.
And so Kevin and his generation particularly, but even folks a little longer in the tooth like me, like Lee and I, we're really starting to use our own devices. I mean, Lee's over there hacking away trying to get a limo
I'm trying to sign up for Uber right now.
Things have really changed in your world, haven't they?
It becomes more and more central to the day and life of each of us, regardless of demographics and locale. And some of the things that we have noticed, and really the foundation of our technology, is where do touch interfaces evolve? If you think about your iPhone and your iPad and other mobile devices, they're navigating on an X by Y plane. It's a very flat, two-dimensional surface. We actually measure a Z-axis or a third dimension. And that adds a degree of functionality and control that most users now are finding that limitation in the current device. So, for example, women with fingernails cannot have a very easy way to use their mobile and tablet devices. If you're wearing gloves, although not often here in Georgia, you cannot use an iPhone or iPad, or God forbid either of us were wounded warriors and had a prosthetic device. Mm-hmm. The technology in iPhones and iPads do not allow you to touch and register that event. Our technology solves that problem.
Is it just more sensitive, or it's got to be more complicated than that?
Well, it's actually simpler than that. Huh. We actually have developed at the nanotechnology lab there in Georgia Tech specific force sensors which measure pressure and actually are integrated into these devices so that Z-axis can be felt and registered in that said device.
That's amazing stuff. So you're the brains behind this?
Well, there's a team. And
it's you though, right?
Always that way, yes. PhD level, MBA level students coming out of Georgia Tech, we have combined together. We're working more in a business-to-business capacity.
Right.
So our customers are the Motorola's, Samsung, HP's.
The people that are creating the devices.
Precisely. Last week, I found myself in Japan visiting a lot of those customers that are interested in this technology.
Right.
Domestically here as well, and I'll be in Korea next month. So it's having those kinds of conversations with those partners interested in bringing this kind of functionality to their products.
Now, I would imagine everybody's at least curious to learn more because it's a breakthrough technology, right?
Correct. Obviously, nextinput.com gives you information, gives you a sneak peek at our technology, and gives you a little video of how this actually works. That's the obvious place to come and take a look. We're building out our team, building out our customer base. And you mentioned Venture Atlanta earlier. That's actually where we launched, and we were TAG Top 40 company
one
recognized.
Of the Spirit of Endeavor award winner?
Precisely. We got to an audience there that really exposed our technology at its early level. Mm-hmm. We are at prototype stage, really classify ourselves as a early stage company, not so much a startup. But when we look at that, we look at where we are. We're raising our funding now to continue that expansion of milestones, and very proud of what we've accomplished.
Now, is there anything that these firms are telling you that you're like, oh, that's a good idea? We didn't think of that.
Great question. In fact, automotive, other sectors where you have interfaces are becoming very strong for us. So, for example, if you think about interfaces in general, they usually fall into three categories. You have voice, such as with Siri. You have gesture, which is like with Kinect.
Right.
Or you have touch. Now, in an automotive environment, because of ambient noise, voice doesn't really work. Gesture, for
could
a variety of other reasons, could be dangerous.
Gesture is very prevalent in the automotive environment.
But touch becomes a natural evolution. Mm-hmm. And in those environments, the steering wheel with the controls typically and historically have been very binary, up, down, right, left.
Right.
And their vision, their thesis, is where can touch and pressure be incorporated into the steering wheel to add additional functionality for the future?
Right.
Those conversations, those customers are who we are hosting and closing now, so that in cars in the future, just like mobile and tablet devices of the future, we'll have this Atlanta-based homegrown technology incorporated.
Now, do you ever foresee cars, because like taking, you know, the dashboard, they have touch screens now on whatever, on the dashboard.
Precisely.
Right. And they're like kind of clumsier than like your iPad or regular tablets. Do you foresee a situation where you'll take your phone or your own personal tablet and just pop it into the dashboard and that becomes a like, why are they creating technology when we already have the technology with us and I'd rather be using my phone in my car rather than their, you know, DVD of a map from 3 years ago.
No, it's a good observation, and I think in reality you'd have to talk to the automotive manufacturers to best answer that question. My perception is, though, that the development window for an automotive car is different than that for a mobile device. Mm-hmm. One takes longer to come to market than the other. And just as we've seen with the introduction of the new iPhone, now you have different docking mechanisms. So from a production logistic perspective, there may be reasons why that delta exists. But I think the greater problem, the one you astutely kind of identify, is it easy to work with that navigational screen? And the short answer is maybe not always.
Right.
And so if you logically can put some control in the steering wheel,
where the hands are already,
then we can add that functionality and user interface. It's more comfortable.
Right. Yeah, that's, like you said, it's just up, down, sideways, and it's kind of basic stuff that doesn't do much functionality.
And even basic stuff has opportunities where it can evolve.
Right.
If you think about something as pedestrian as a mouse or a keyboard or remote control, when you're picking up that device and you're going channel up or fast forward or volume up, if you think about it, that click, click, click is a very binary function. It's stepping up.
Right.
But now if I want to pick up my remote control and touch a button and dynamically fast forward through my DVR, that's a higher degree of control.
Sure.
If I want to put just my finger down on a mouse, no longer do you have carpal tunnel. No longer do you have repetitive stress. Now your simple pressure allows you to dynamically zoom in and out or scroll through pages. So it's a very intuitive, natural interface that I'm proud to be part of here from Georgia Tech.
Now, this conversation's a little bit early. I mean, even if I have Lee's money, I'm not really interacting with this stuff just yet. Is that right?
That's precise. There's a bit of a, you know, like development window
week,
here. Well, maybe a little longer than that. But depending upon the complexity of the products that our various customers are developing, it could be a couple of quarters or a couple of years before the consumer actually will benefit from this. But I think it also speaks to the opportunity here where that consumers also have a benefit, but the manufacturers do as well. Next Input is actually quite pleased that we're able to offer a technical solution that consumes less power and is less costly to
integrate.
So that
extends battery life?
Precisely. If you think of mobile and tablet devices, we as users.
No, we're charging at 3 o'clock. We're recharging.
We're trying to rent limos. Right. And you want this to work longer and longer. So our technology is actually more saves it both on two fronts, both on the power consumption as well as the cost of integration.
So right now, what do you need more of? You need more money? You need more customers?
Personnel, actually.
People.
In this market, yes.
Brains.
Well,
need more brains.
Embedded systems engineer, UI, UX, project managers. We really do cultivate that kind of talent here locally just to keep the engagement with our customers. We're taking that path. We're going to be raising an institutional round next year, but we're very proud that we were given the financial resources by a network of people across the country, both locally.
Are you going to stay here? Because a lot of people take money and then they hit the road.
I think there's always going to be a home here because I think the story works well here. We're part of Georgia Tech. We're part of ATDC. We're part of the nanotechnology lab down there. We bring customers there repetitively, give them tours. We're very proud of that made in Atlanta story.
Now, when you're, kind of pushing the edge here in terms of technology and you have a need for personnel, is this something you can, when you are partnering with Georgia Tech, kind of work with their professors and then create kind of curriculum to solve your problem in terms of kind of growing your own team?
I think there is. And I think there's an avenue there both for networking as well as academically a degree of specialization.
Right.
The underlying technology, not to get down to the weeds, but this MEMS technology, and microelectronic mechanical switches, is a very specialized area.
Right. So there's not that many people, I would imagine.
Well, there's pockets and sectors.
Right.
You're absolutely correct. And we feel that making sure the awareness is there, which obviously you're helping here today, but also establishing that network and that conduit to come to nextinput.com, review the positions that we have, be part of this team, be aware this technology is evolving over the next couple of years. We'd like you to be part of it.
But does it go down to the level of, I'm a high school kid that has high potential and I'm going to go to Georgia Tech and I'm interested in this, I'm intrigued by this, and this is something, and can you work with Georgia Tech to kind of help them find me and guide me to these kind of, to get this knowledge that you need to grow your company, but also I need to grow my career?
I think that is a very viable avenue. At the end of the day, there is going to be some domain expertise that is required here.
You don't need college kids, you need people that are graduated college?
Well, or nearing completion. We actively hire and retain interns that are coming in to give them exposure to the market.
As early as possible.
That would be ideal.
Integrate them into your culture and what you're doing, and then kind of cherry pick the good ones and move them in.
Precisely. And we'll look at that expansion as well for other markets.
Right.
We like the idea of having the ability to work intrinsically here, make sure our team grows organically, and we do see Georgia Tech as being an ongoing part of that solution.
Now, Georgia Tech's a partner with you. I'm sure they've got their fingers in a lot of other technology pies right now.
Absolutely.
How do you do you play in that way as well? Like, are you sharing information with other groups within there to help kind of lift all the boats?
Well, being over at ATDC does give you direct exposure to a multitude of companies.
Right.
We're all sort of a small fraternity community there, and so there's a lot of water cooler talk. So wherever
right.
we can help, we certainly do. I spent most of my career in the Silicon Valley, for example. That network, the ability to introduce people, whether it's from a time and talent or financial perspective, we're always open to do that and to help and extend a hand where possible.
Now, is there anything that you're seeing that we're lacking here in Atlanta, since you come from Silicon Valley and you've experienced what that's like? It seems like if someone's in a startup in Silicon Valley and the thing explodes for a bad reason, they can just kind of jump to somewhere else pretty easily. And here, we don't have the density of startups and emerging companies. Is there things that we could be doing better here?
The thing that jumped out to me, and this became apparent last year, which was a bit of a surprise, was the seasonality. And I stopped. I remember having conversations. We were talking to various firms, whether it was from a staffing or a funding perspective. And they said, oh, yeah, we shut down in May. What is it, summer break?
Right.
Time to go fishing.
And exactly. They were going down to different spots, and they were like, yeah, we really don't open up reviews any further until after Labor Day. And you mentioned earlier about coming into event season.
Right.
That is a foreign concept to me. In the Bay Area, we work 12 months out of 12.
Right. The pedals to the ground.
Yeah, and I think that is. And perhaps that's just a cultural thing. It could be a little climatic, whatever it is. But fundamentally, that's the part that surprised me the most and what I would encourage.
But is that an anomaly to Silicon Valley, or is this more of a quality of life?
No, I think it's an exception here regionally in the Southeast.
Really?
I noticed it from some conversations with people in Birmingham and Florida. So
right.
It just must be so miserably hot. I don't know. I enjoy the heat.
Right.
I enjoy the area here. I come here every 3 or 4 weeks. So to me, it hasn't been a factor.
Right.
It was a bit of a surprise.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, no grits and collards and hog jowls. That can slow your metabolism down and have you take a little different
place. He doesn't know about that. Might as well be speaking a foreign language.
So you've lived this. You've got some experience with this thing. What kind of mistakes do companies that were maybe where Next Input was 18 months, 36 months ago, what kind of mistakes do companies make in that critical stage that sometimes just blows them out of the water, and maybe just with a few well-placed comments, you could save them a little heartache?
The one that's a bit of a cliche is overpromise, underdeliver. Where Next Input, I think, is really taking the appropriate steps is that when we're engaging with the Samsungs and the Motorolas and the HPs of the world, we have to make sure that we support their launches and their product timeline. And we do that by making commitments, making interim milestones. And I'm very proud of the fact that when we launched last year and went to the Consumer Electronics Show in January and we laid out a quarter-by-quarter milestones, we hit them.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. We'll be able to show within a first year of operations, not only hitting those production milestones, signing our customers, closing our round of funding, but being able to incrementally show those achievements. And that builds trust and commitment by the partners that we're working with both domestically and internationally.
Now, you mentioned a lot of the firms. I don't remember you mentioning Apple. Was that by accident?
No, not at all. And in all worlds, you're going to come across the radar of all these companies, Apple included. Fundamentally, whether you're working with or against or in partnership, all of these players know one another.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Apple would be a very attractive partner in some capacity, but not any more so than a Samsung or Motorola would be.
But is this a challenger brand strategy that you'd rather work with the challenger brands?
It's really a sort of platform agnostic perspective. We really look at the partners all focusing on their niche market.
Right.
For example, I mentioned I was in Japan last week. Fujitsu there. Fujitsu is not a big brand in the U.S.
Right.
They're number one in Japan.
Right.
So to us, wherever we can add value to the consumer and to the market, add some functionality, we want to be part of that solution.
But is that part of the strategy to exclude Apple and then kind of make it so that they have to come to you?
Not in the least. At any point of the day, I'll reach out to them. They could reach out to us. We would take their appointment just as we would for others.
So how does that work, though? Like Fujitsu, we're familiar with all these names. And sure. So you just sit on you're hanging out at the ATDC at the water cooler with Keith and sharing some wisdom. And then all of a sudden you guys decide, you know what, we ought to go talk to Fujitsu. I mean, you can't just pick up the phone and call Fujitsu. How does that work?
A lot of it is network. Some of us, myself included, have been in the consumer electronics and computer products business. We have our network. The seed investors who come in and support our company.
And that's part of the deal, right? When they're investing.
Precisely.
It's not just the money.
You get their Rolodex with them, right?
It's not just clearing a check. You actually want active participation. So, you know, they always talk about 6 degrees of separation, particularly in the Silicon Valley. I don't think there's more than three. So if you want to get to somebody or if you want to use LinkedIn or other professional networks, you can get on somebody's radar. And you can ask for an appointment, and you can make a presentation. And as long as you do that block and tackle work, make the incremental milestones that you achieve, you can get the attention of world-class companies.
So you've got the attention of everybody you're interested in?
We have. And if we fit and align with those sort of strategic models, then I think you'll see those announcements coming as early as 2013. If there are different courses that they may be taking, for example, an inherently competitive solution that's an alternative, then we might not have the alignment, and therefore each company will shake hands and wish one another well.
So what are you going to be doing with your time for the next 12, 18 months? Because you're not quite at umbrellas and a drink time. Yeah, you've got some work to do between now and then.
We've got a lot of work. And whether we're talking about 1 month, 1 quarter, 1 year from now, we're going to be very focused on these deliverables, very focused on supporting those clients, very focused on supporting the charter partners. Because really, at the end of the day, as we scale, we can't do everything for everybody. So we want to be able to sign initial partners, sign them in their particular sectors, give them a market exclusivity window,
right?
Allow them an opportunity to compete in their market, and there, as we scale, we can work with the other partners and as a secondary and tertiary effort.
And that's part of, I guess, your selling proposition is that the first one in is really has a competitive advantage.
Precisely.
I like that.
It is.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more, website?
Nextinput.com.
And if you're a college kid on a PhD program,
attach your resume in there and come see us. We got smart people. I couldn't be more proud of whom I'm associated with here today. Been working with them for a little over a year from now, and we got exciting things ahead.
And this is the type of company that you're working on, and this can be your monument, right? You're doing stuff that no one else is doing.
I think that's what's always interesting about technology is because you can evolve, whether it's from a services like Uber or a technology such as Next Input, saying that you had an opportunity to put your finger on, be part of that.
And shape it, right?
Absolutely.
You're making a mark, and then you're going to leave your mark. So that's kind of an interesting opportunity. Not many out there.
Well, thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share it with you today.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Patent. We will see you next week on Emerging Enterprise.